Views and opinions expressed on the following program are those of the hosts and guests and not necessarily those of the staff or management of KLAB.
I just heard the other day about the seizure of the waves and of the taking of the hostages and its matter of the day. For it's well I know that feeling of hopelessness and dreaming. For almost 20 years now I've been one of the living dead. Our leader sent me greetings and said I'd have to fight. The commies were taking Vietnam, we'd have to set that right. I obeyed my country's call to arms that helped keep those people free. But I never dreamt they'd bring me here and then abandon.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Tour of Duty, radio talk for today's military warriors and its veterans. And of course, civilians are always welcome to call in. We are transmitting from KLAB 1230 AM live in Las Vegas via Lake Gregory, California. That is where the eagles fly at 5,000 feet in the San Bernardino National Forest. Live on the internet stream, of course, just go to 1230 AM or go on the Warp Radio and punch in KLAB and you'll find us. Email address is tourofduty762fmj@msn.com. We are on Monday through Friday from 10 p.m. to 11 p.m., 2200 hours to use salt. Locally in Nevada, if you have a call in, we're at 731-1230. Outside Nevada is 866-820-5528. The opening song is The Living Dead by Stan Seals, a Korean veteran, wrote it, he sang it, and produced it. This portion of the show is brought to you by Vico Technologies, the best machine shop in the country. See VicoTechnologies.com. Also, ThermoShield. No more painting your home. Coat it with ThermoShield. See ThermoShield.com. I'd like to make our mission statement. Tour of Duty exists solely to support our great country and to pay the proper respect to the veterans of its wars, both foreign and domestic. We who have served or are presently serving in the military took a solemn oath when we embarked on that service. That oath is constantly binding. We took it in God's presence and in His name. We are dedicated to preserving the memory of our brothers and sisters who have gone before us, and those who are suffering from injuries of body and mind, that we're sustained in protecting our nation and Constitution. Our disclaimer, the views expressed on this program are the staff of Tour of Duty only and not of the station, program sponsors, or the Department of Defense. We are free Americans and patriots and are here today to exercise our rights guaranteed to us under the First Amendment of our precious Bill of Rights. All information provided to you today is not classified or restricted in any way. Tonight, we're going to be talking to a gentleman from the USS Liberty. And before we get to Gary, I would like to dedicate this show to the crew of the USS Liberty. And I would also like to read off the names of the men that were killed in action in this event. William Allenball, Alan Blue, Jerry Converse, Curtis Graves, Alan Higgins, Petty Officer, Seaman James Lanoux, Dwayne Margraff, Petty Officer, Seaman Terry Nygren, Corporal Edward Rahmeyer, USMC, Melvin Smith, Chief Petty Officer, Petty Officer Thomas Thornton, Lieutenant Commander Philip Armstrong, he got the Navy Cross for heroism, Francis Brown, Petty Officer, Robert Eisenberg, Petty Officer, Lawrence Hayden, Seaman, Carl Hoare, H-O-A-R, Petty Officer, R. Lynn, Chief Petty Officer, David Marlboro, Seaman, Lieutenant James Pierce, David Skolak, John Spiker, Petty Officer, Philip Tytick, Petty Officer, Frederick Walton, Petty Officer, Gary Blanchard, seaman, Ronnie Campbell, petty officer, Jerry Goss, petty officer, Warren Hershey, petty officer, Richard Keene, seaman, James Lupron, petty officer, Anthony Metal, petty officer, Sergeant Jack Rapper, officer, John Smith Jr., petty officer, Alexander Thompson, petty officer, Lieutenant Stephen Toe, also won the Silver Star for heroism. Welcome to Tour of Duty, our guest tonight, I got choked up on that one, excuse me, ladies and gentlemen, is Gary Brumet. He is the president of the USS Liberty Association, and we're going to talk to him about what happened 38 years ago. Gary, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, can you hear me?
Just barely.
I'll tell you what, I'll just do a little change. Is that any better?
Well, I heard you better just before you called my name.
Okay, Gary, this is what I'd like to do. I know we're not going to get all this done in one night.
Okay.
But what we're going to try and do is we're going to do this over a period of probably 4 to 6 different shows, and the USS Liberty will actually be part of our program from this day forward.
Okay.
And I just want to take you back here about 38 years, 8th of June, 1967. And let's start off with, what kind of a day was it?
Well, before we start, I would like to thank you on behalf of the crew of the USS Liberty, the surviving family members, friends, and supporters of our organization, for allowing me the opportunity to come here, although it is midnight here in Louisiana where I'm from, and I'm normally sawing logs at this time of day, but we appreciate very much having the opportunity anywhere at any time we can tell our story, day or night, and I also want to thank you for having your program, Tour of Duty, and I also thank you for your service to your country and the United States Marine Corps in Vietnam, I believe.
Hoorah. Thank you.
All right, now, to get back to your question, you asked me what type of day June 8th was.
1967.
It started out as all our days, you know, at sea. It was a good day sailing, you might say. It was sunny and clear. It was an unlimited visibility that day. You could see, almost see the cracks in heaven. You know?
Well, technically, there wouldn't be any mistaken identity.
Well, if it was, you'd have had to have been blind in one eye and couldn't see out of the other.
Well, then, who attacked the Liberty?
Well, we were attacked by Israeli Defense Forces. We were first attacked by high-speed jet aircraft. But this was after we had been reconned all morning. It started shortly after daylight, and we had been reconned that day 10 or 12 times. At 10:55 a.m. Tel Aviv time, they had, using the book Jane's Fighting Ships, which is a British publication, list all ships and all navies in the world. They had identified the Liberty, and they had put us on in their war room charts. I mean, it wasn't as if they didn't know who we were. I mean, that plus the fact that we were reconned by these overflights approximately every 30 or so minutes throughout the morning up till just prior to the attack. And
so there was these guys actually flew around you for a good portion of the morning.
Right.
They came to the conclusion it was a USS Liberty.
Correct.
And now, do you know that for a fact?
Yes, I do know that for an absolute fact. There's nothing that I or any of the other crewmen that have the opportunity to speak to you, we won't say a thing that we cannot back up with substantiated fact.
Okay,
and
let's take it.
Of course,
go ahead, Gary. I'm going to let you finish.
During this attack, the planes came in just a few minutes after 1400 hours, as we know it in the military, a little bit after 2 p.m. in the afternoon for civilians. And this attack lasted for 20 or so minutes. And I know you were in Vietnam. I don't know how many rounds you got close to, but, you know, here you are.
I was always in a safe place.
you're at sea, and I mean, you heard and felt every round that hit that ship, especially the missiles.
Well, now that you mention that, I do want to just kind of break in here. On your website, USS Liberty, there's pictures of the ship, and I sat here for an hour looking at photos. You can see identify the aircraft. You can identify the torpedo boats and the numerous holes, including the torpedo hole on the side of the hull. It was just incredible.
Well, when we got to Valletta, Malta, on June the 14th, so we went into dry dock so the ship could be patched up and we could bring it back stateside. I never left the ship. I stayed on board and brought it back across. But one of the first things that we did after we got in dry dock, they assembled 5 2-man teams. There were 10 of us in all, from the waterline above, I should say. We counted penetrations in the ship in large indentations. There was 821, plus the torpedo hole, which was 22 by 39 feet. Now, to put this in perspective, 22 by 39 feet, we're talking about a hole 3 stories tall, 22 feet wide. You could take my house and stick in that hole, the end of it, if you turned it on its side. It was quite a hole, and that doesn't... We didn't count all the many thousands of little pecks and pock marks that was there, because you couldn't have counted. We'd still be there counting. Those were from strafing rounds, we assume, from the attacking aircraft.
Before we go too much farther into the tech, I want to make sure that... one of the things that puzzles me about this is the USS Liberty definitely had the American flag flying on top of the mast. Is that correct?
That's correct. At sea, you know, and any sailor knows this, if he's not drunk and just coming off a leave, the flag at sea flies from your mast, which is like on our ship, it was above and kind of slightly behind, you might say, the superstructure of the ship. And this mast, from the waterline to the top of this mast, or where this flag would have flown from, is roughly 120 to 125 feet high above water level. I mean, this flag flies day and night when you're at sea. Now, if you're in port, it is flown from a small ensign on the fantail of the ship. But, you know, there has been some question as to whether or not the flag was flying. One of the crewmen found the original flag, or what was left of it. It had been shot up and burnt up. There was another flag, a third flag, or a second flag that went up, but was only up a short time, that I do have pictures of. It was recently donated to the Cold War Museum.
That's in your website. So it's in one of the websites they saw that.
Correct. I have pictures of that flag with bullet holes in it. But it couldn't have flown but just for a few moments, and then they ran the big flag up, the Holiday Ensign, as it was called, which was 7 by 13 feet. And a strange thing, I want to make a mention of this. In the cruise book of the USS America, pictures taken from their flight deck on June 9th, 1967, from a distance, I would say, of probably 300 to 400 yards. Some have said, well, y'all weren't flying a flag, or the flag was hanging limp at the mast. I want to point something out here. If you would look at that picture, and I think it's also on the website.
Yes, it is.
You will note on the bow, or the front end of the ship, on the starboard side, starboard being right, you will see the letters GTR5. That's only, they're white letters on a gray background. These letters is just, a blind man could see them. And if you would note the flag, note just more than the flag, note the calmness of the ocean. There's very little surface action of the ocean, but there is still enough breeze at that height where that flag is flying from. That flag in two pennants is fully extended. You could not miss this flag.
Okay, so that takes care of the mistaken identity.
Well, and let me add another, add something to that. Something one of my fellow crewmen, Phil Turney, out in California, Colorado, mentioned to me here a while back. He said, you remember when we went up to Fort Meade and to the to look at the Liberty display there at the museum? I said, yeah. He said, do you remember looking at the Holiday Inn? And I said, yeah, I sure do. He said, do you remember seeing any smoke or debris or anything, any discoloration on this flag? That flag and the other flag that was just given to the Cold War Museum, if smoke, if these flags had been enveloped in smoke, they would have been tainted and dirty, and they're not. And these flags had not been cleaned. There's just no way that these flags were ever not visible to anyone.
Gary, do you think, was this a attack an accident?
Do you believe in the Easter Bunny, the Sandman, Santa Claus? Now, if you believe in those kind of things, you know,
okay,
well...
Okay, next question. What would the attack, the full attack
last? May I say unequivocally, hell no.
Okay.
There's no earthly way it was an accident. I mean, I would only encourage people to look at the facts, the truth, and you make a rational decision. You know, if you've got two gray cells between your ears that you can rub together, still function and think, you look at the information that's out there, and you can only really come to one conclusion. It was a planned, concerted, well-coordinated attack with its apparent intentions of taking this ship completely out and removing the entire crew. I want to add something to what I just said. The Liberty was an old Victory hull ship. The hull of this ship was maybe 3/4 inch to 1 inch thick. How a torpedo could have hit this ship in any place and not sink the ship is absolutely beyond belief. It just blows the mind. It blows your mind.
Well, especially you when you see the size of this thing. Gary?
Yes, sir.
The size of that hole was right at the water line, and it is amazing that it didn't sink.
Well, it's the torpedo hit below the water line, and the only thing that really kept us from sinking, when the torpedo hit the side of the ship, it hit a main frame, and it exploded before it entered into the ship. Or it exploded as it was entering the ship, I guess would be the best way to say it.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
And it warped this steel. If you look at the pictures on the website closely, all this steel is warped around and blown inward. And all the men that was in there, they were, and I hope none of their surviving children are listening tonight, you know, they were just parts and pieces.
Yeah.
They were some whole bodies in there, but it was... That was a most ungodly grim thing. There was three bodies.
Gary, how long did the attack last?
Well, there are some that will disagree with this that said, oh, it only lasted a few minutes. Well, a few minutes my behind, it lasted about 75 minutes. And here goes something. I'm glad you asked that because this goes to the point. You know, if they had made a run down the center line with one jet, maybe even two jets, and hit us with a couple of missiles, and it's, oh, my God, this is an American ship. You could believe that was an accident. But for us to be attacked by aircraft, to be attacked by motor torpedo boats, and even after we were hit with the torpedo, we're sitting dead in the water. The main engines had come to a full stop. The propeller was no longer turning. The Israeli motor torpedo boats came within 50 yards of this vessel, and we've got forensics to back up what I'm saying. The where they hit us on the starboard side amidships with some, I don't know if you'd call it 40 millimeters guns or not. I'm not well versed on.
I believe there were 20s because I was looking at the holes of the ship.
Okay, is it 20 millimeter?
Yeah, it's a 20.
Okay, now that because I cannot knowledgeably speak of that type of weapon and stuff like that. I have no background in that. And but they were so close to us. There is no way. And the flags, not the flags, the fire's top side were out. They were no longer burning at this point. The flag was still flying. I mean, they pulled in close. They shot at the people that was on deck. They hit the side of the ship a horrendous number of times. The pictures prove what I'm saying. The life rafts that had not been burned up in their carriages, three of them were dropped over the side. The captain had said, you know, to stand by the abandoned ship, and they were moving the grievously wounded up on main deck, or had them going in that direction. And Lloyd Painter, who was one of the officers, observed and has a sworn statement that he witnessed the PT boats fire upon the life rafts. One of our other crewmen, Mr. Glenn Oliphant, also witnessed this. Glenn was on the port side of the ship, though, and he said he could see them firing at something, and at first he didn't know what they were shooting at, and then one of these rafts had the wave action had moved it over enough, he realized that it was a life raft they were shooting at. So, I mean, we had more than one crewman that saw this happen. Now, this you won't find this in the Naval Court of Inquiry because this was stricken from the investigation.
Well, let's take out all the truth, right?
Right.
I got to ask you something. Now, this is all going on. Did you guys have communication? Did you have the ability to communicate with? I know during that time they had that there was other ships. The USS America was close by.
Well, as far as flight time, I think they were somewhere in the range of 15 to 20 minutes flight time from us.
Yeah.
There was a jamming of our frequencies, and this brings up another point. Israel has said that they thought we was the El Kassar. The El Kassar, that vessel was 195 feet shorter than we were and 8,000 tons.
Doesn't that thing carry horses?
Beg your pardon?
Didn't that carry horses? I was reading
it was called a horse carrier.
Yeah, horse carrier.
Like I say, it was 195 feet shorter and 8,000 tons, or one-fourth our size. Correction, one-fifth our size. I said that wrong. Yeah. But if they thought that that was an Egyptian ship they were attacking, why did they jam American naval frequencies? The frequencies would have been different. We've had one radio tower that had been put out of commission prior to the attack, so it was not up and running. And during the attack, the heat-seeking missiles had taken out all of these towers. I'm going to use the term tower. That's probably not the correct terminology for it, or stands that... radio stands with whip antennas on them.
Right,
But there was one, like I say, that was inoperable. It was not on. It was the only one that was not shot to hell and gone. And some of the ETs and radiomen, as Dave Lewis had said, they were running long wires and got this tower up and was broadcasting, you know, Rockstar under attack. Rockstar being a code name for the Liberty. And a radio operator on the USS Saratoga, the big carrier, picked this message up.
So you did get an SOS out to the 6th Fleet?
Correct. We did. And the 6th Fleet did respond. And here's where things kind of go crazy, you might say. They launched aircraft to our aid, only to be countermanded by Defense Secretary Robert McNamara, and the second time countermanded by the President of the United States, Lyndon B. Johnson.
I want to make sure I understand this. the carriers launch fighters to go help you.
Correct.
And then they, as soon as they were launched or in the air, these birds were in the air, right?
Correct. They were on the way to the Liberty.
And we called them back. Our people called them back.
Right. Our Secretary of Defense. As I understand it, they use what they call the Criticom network, and some of the guys that understand that better could better describe it than I, but that was a frequency link or a link that they had back to the Pentagon at the time. That was prior to we having all these satellites upstairs and all the stuff that we have today. Now, our ability to communicate was as great as anybody's in the world, I guess I could say, from the Liberty, because we was either listening, sending, or receiving at all times. And message had been sent to the Sixth Fleet. In turn, the Sixth Fleet notified the Pentagon, which Robert McNamara became involved at this point. American ship Liberty under attack. Aircraft have been launched for their protection. And they didn't get too very far from the carrier, and McNamara told them to get the planes back on the carrier. Now, here you've got pilots that have been trained to fight. They're trained all the time for this, and here you've got a real-life situation. We're under attack. They call these planes back. Now, you brought the question up, the killing part of them calling the planes back. Well, there's many killing things about it. This happened, the first bunch of planes were recalled before the torpedo boats got to us, and we got hit by a torpedo. If our planes had been allowed to come on to us, there would be 25
men. Harry, hold that thought, and we're going to talk about the investigation on the other side of this break, all right?
Okay,
don't go away. This is Sergeant Richard Cabral with Tour of Duty. We'll be right back after this short break. Sergeant Richard Cabral? We are back here. This is Tour of Duty. This is your host, Sergeant Richard Cabral, with Gary Brumet. He is the president of the USS Liberty Association. And if you'd like to ask Gary a question, you can call us at 866-820-5528. And locally there in Vegas, 731-1230. Okay, Gary, I told you to hold that thought. Let's pick it up where we left off.
Okay. Let's see. Where were we talking about? The planes had been launched from the Saratoga.
Right, and we were talking about them being called back.
Right. Admiral Larry Geist took command of the what was going on at that point in time. He was a senior naval man in the two carrier task forces, the America and the Saratoga. And they had notified the Pentagon that the Liberty was under attack. They had launched planes to ward off the attackers, see what the hell was going on. The planes had hardly gotten over the horizon until they were recalled back. They were not allowed to come on to our aid. Had they done this, because this was the first wave that was launched, had they done this, the torpedo attack had not taken place at this point in time. There was 25 men that got killed from the torpedo. That wouldn't have happened. And so, you know, I hold McNamara, Lyndon Johnson, he's dead. Most of the players in this game are the old ones. But I hold those two mostly responsible for what happened. I can hold and have animosities against the state of Israel, but my greatest animosities are against my own government, because they're the ones that have denied us.
Now, that's easy to understand. Okay, now I'm going to ask the tough question here. All of this that happened, this attack, was it ever investigated, like the attack on the Stark or the Colt?
Well, the attack on the Stark and the Colt, if you will remember from news accounts, what have you, I forget the year the Stark was attacked, and I'm ashamed of myself. I don't recall the exact
year. Well, I don't remember either. I was going through all my notes, and I know Clinton was in office, if I recall.
I'm not sure, but it was attacked by an Iraqi pilot. The ship was hit with an Exocet missile. It was 37 men killed. And they interviewed this pilot. The FBI was over there talking to him, and this went on for 4 or 5 months, this investigation. In regard to the coal and the 16 men that lost their lives that day because of two fools on a little bitty surface craft that crashed into the side of them, this investigation is still ongoing. And as far as the Liberty is concerned, we had what they called a Naval Court of Inquiry. Admiral Kidd was the convening senior officer there that took care of the Naval Board of Inquiry. And the legal officer for this deal was a Captain Ward Boston. Captain Boston is still alive, lives in Corona, California, I believe. His Admiral Kidd has been dead for some year, 4 or 5 years now. But they knew what they had to find out before they investigated.
Now, was Ward Boston, was he a JAG officer?
Yes, he was a JAG officer.
Okay.
And they were under orders from McNamara and from Johnson that Israel said, hey, we attacked this ship by accident. And they were under orders to go along with this story or to make the politicians wanted had to be that it was an accident. Now, Ward Boston remained silent for 35 years and said nothing one way or the other. And about 2 years ago, Captain Boston came forward and said, you know, somebody's trying to rewrite history. And I don't want this to happen. He didn't want to die with it on his conscience. He wanted the truth to be known. And he said, you know, we were under orders to find that this was that it was an accident. One of our own officers, some of his testimony, the testimony that was given about the life rafts being shot up, you won't find that in this court of inquiry stuff. And you see, every time you turn around, you hear about a congressional investigation, you know, of a swamp rat in Florida or something. And here we had 34 men killed, 172 wounded out of a crew of only 294. And you as a Marine, you know, 69% casualty rate, that's pretty damn high.
Real high.
We've never from that day to this had any type of a congressional investigation to put all the facts on the table. We stop and look at what happened. And still to this day, we're still filing FOIA request or Freedom of Information Act request, and our government either will not give to us what we ask, they're redacted, which they're blacked out.
Yeah, they give you a bunch
of
copies of everything blacked out.
Later, I mean, where in the hell does national security play in that? All the stuff that was used back then is relics, is junk. It's in a museum somewhere. It's part of the cover-up that has gone on all these years. And keeping us guys from the truth being told about what really happened.
Well, now that you mention that, who is A.J. Crystal?
Well, now he... oh, me. He is a... retired Navy officer. He attained his rank basically, I think, through the reserves. He's a federal bankruptcy judge down in Florida. And he wrote a book, Liberty Incident, something like that. Now, some people have called it a book. There's other things I would call it, but if I'm live on the air, I'm afraid I can't say what I'd call it. But Mr. Crystal's book is what caused Captain Ward Boston to come out of the woodwork and tell what really happened. Now, Captain Ward Boston, I have a video of him, as do a good many of the other people, board members, our attorney in California, and people like that. With Ward Boston confirming on video that, hey, this was a deliberate attack, and we knew it. We also have an expanded declaration from Captain Ward Boston stating this. I mean, of course, Crystal said, well, the guy's a liar. Do you believe him now, or is he lying now, or was he lying then? Well, let me ask you a question. You were in the military. If a politician, let's say the Secretary of Defense in this case, or the President, told you to do something, would you follow orders, or would you not follow orders? You always have a choice. Yeah. If you didn't follow the orders, you was out. Your career would be over, wouldn't it? How would you view that, Richard? I mean, you and I both were in the military. You know, the people in the military, they follow the higher-up's command. Whatever they tell you to do, you do it. Now, Mr. Crystal, he says, you know, hey, it was an accident, fog of war, friendly fire. You know, we've tried to get these congressional investigations, and he's been totally against it. Well, let me tell you what we did, the Liberty Veterans Association. We posted a $10,000 prize. I mean, we'd have posted more, but we're a poor organization. But we posted a $10,000 prize for anyone that can prove there was ever one congressional investigation about the attack on the USS Liberty. All right, we posted this probably a year ago. Guess what? We still got the $10,000, and we still don't have any takers. Now, why is that? Mr. Crystal in his book claims there was 13 investigations on the Tony Del Vecchio program here some months back. He alluded to the fact that there had been five, no less than five, I think is his words, congressional investigations into the USS Liberty. There's no need for any more. Why waste the money? I kind of differ with Mr. Crystal.
We're talking about what really happened, okay? I believe that everything you're saying is truthful. But what I still don't understand is why.
Why did Israel attack the ship?
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what, we could debate that for many years. There's lots of ideas and thoughts been put forth. The day that the ship was attacked, we was off of Sinai, and the closest town to us was a place called El Arish. And I know about 5 or 6 minutes, 7 minutes, a very short time frame, prior to the attack, our captain came on the 1MC, which is the ship's PA system, and said there's, 12 or 13 nautical miles, give the bearing, direction, everything. There's fighting there. And, we were in a war zone, what have you. And I can remember walking up topside, and I could see the minaret at El Arish. Well, there's been some reports, Richard, that there were a good many Egyptian POWs, that were massacred there that day. That could be one reason. Another reason, if you try to go to the why did this happen, this was the day before Israel took the Golan Heights. The Golan Heights was fertile soil, and more importantly, there was water there. You know, here in this country, especially like where I live down here in Louisiana, there's water everywhere, but that's not the case in many places in the world, and the water there is an extremely valuable commodity. That would be a reason for it. I mean, that list could go on and on.
Well, I have to say, Gary,
why at this point, place, day, and time in the game, to me, is not that important. I mean, they did it. There's no denying it. All the stories that have been told, the lies that have been put forth by both governments,
and I think that's what I'm getting at, is why. You know,
well, and,
you
know, I don't know why they...
Let me ask you, just mention something else here. I spoke with your vice president and of your association, and after he was aboard the USS Liberty, he also spent 30 years in the CIA, and he had a real interesting scenario of why all of this happened, which, by the way, he'll be on the show next Friday night. And listening to him was like listening to, well, you know, being, you always said you wanted to be the fly on the wall of some situation, and it was incredible to me that he,
well, you
he
see,
came to the
there are some of the guys in the group that are interesting to listen to. They're not like this redneck here from North Louisiana. Ernie did spend a few years in the Navy, and after what happened on the Liberty, as he and I have talked numerous times, and Ernie and I talk nearly every day, he told me, he said, you know, he said, I knew that I didn't want to stay in the Navy, and, you know, there's one thing, if you're a CT in the U.S. Navy, when you get out, the State Department will hire you, the CIA, the NSA. I had a brother that was a CT that was a plank member on the Liberty, made three cruises on it. And he was not on there when it was attacked. And,
what does CT stand for?
Communications technician.
And how many of those did you have on that ship?
I want to think there was in the neighborhood of 100. The more correct number, I believe, was 95. That is a question that Ernie can answer better than I can.
And the ship consisted of 294 men, correct?
Right. I mean, the largest contingent of anybody on the ship was the CTs. There was more CTs than there were engineers, and the engineers are the one that made the ship run, go, and get you where you needed to be. And that's the group I was with. And then,
well, I'll tell you what, I'm gonna have Ernie on next Friday. I do have good shows on Friday because people can stay up with us. Listen, you also made five trips. Did when you say... We chatted about this, the five trips that you made to Israel. Did you, was that what you did? You actually went over there?
No. What I was talking about there, it wasn't five, it was 15 trips. We were talking about the book that Mr. Crystal had written.
Oh, okay, now I got it, all right.
And, you know, people had asked what kind of research did this guy do. Well, by his own admission, he made 15 trips to Israel, and he had done some FOIA requests. And there's only two crewmen that were ever interviewed. He says he interviewed four, but two of these guys that he said he interviewed signed a sworn affidavit that they never granted him an interview, and the other two guys swore up and down that they had only talked to him while drinking a beer. So all of his research has been done devoid of crew members. I think there has only been one that actually gave him an interview and assisted him. And he's not real popular with the rest of us, you might say.
Okay, so now, this brings me to the next question is, who was Terry O'Keefe?
Okay, well, he was a... he was an intelligence officer that had occasion to meet Mr. Crystal. Crystal thought that O'Keefe was very interested in his work. Terry has signed a sworn affidavit as to this, and it is in our legal files, and our attorney has it in California. Some of the stuff that Terry observed and has written down, and, you know, just to have a record of it, he's gone on record for us with it. I think Mr. Crystal picked him up one time at the airport. He'd been to his office at the federal building. Now, mind you, this guy's a federal bankruptcy judge. And during his visits and looking, well, the way he came about meeting him was a intelligence officer's, some kind of reunion they had in Miami. And Crystal was speaking there. That is how they actually met, I believe. Terry acted as though he was interested in his work and what he knew about the Liberty. And Crystal evidently thought this young man thought he was a fine, outstanding person and kind of trusted him a little bit. And Terry, in talking and looking around, the employees in Mr. Crystal's office made the statement to him that the book was a joint effort by everybody in the office. And, you know, this, to me, creates a problem. I work for the government myself, not in such a, you know, a, not a, like a judge or anything, but I was worked for the post office for 32 years, and there's some things that you were not allowed to do. I couldn't use government stationery or franked mail, stuff like that. And here we've got federal employees, or I assume they're federal employees. They're working in a federal building for a federal judge. And he had all of his liberty research there in file cabinets in his office in the federal building. He answered correspondence with his federal letterhead. And the people in his office said that the writing of the book was a joint venture. And I'm kind of wondering, is that a wise use or misuse of government money? That kind of smells bad to me.
Yeah, it sure does. Sure does. Let's talk about a little bit more. You know, it's amazing to me that this hour is almost gone, but some of the other stuff on your website, you've got some pretty good pictures.
Correct.
And I was noticing there was this thing about the gun camera photos.
Okay.
Were those photos of those gun cameras had to be Israeli pictures, right?
Well, that's what they were purported to be, but you know what they really are? We've got forensics experts that have gone through all this stuff and kind of tore it up, and the gun camera photos that you bring up, the ones that you're asking about, are pictures that this fine judge used in his book.
Ah.
And they are purported to be gun camera photos, but you know what they really are? It is docking photos of the USS Liberty when we got back into port in Little Creek, Virginia. These are not gun camera photos. We've got photo analysis that have gone in there, have tore this stuff apart, and can prove beyond the shadow of anybody, any doubt. I mean, I and our attorney in California, well over a year ago, we were looking at these pictures. And here's this what appears to be a huge splash beside the ship. I told him, I said, you know, I cannot figure what in the world could have made that splash, because the jets were gone when the torpedo hit us, so it couldn't have been a splash from that going off. It just didn't wash out, you know, didn't look right. And if something had have exploded and made such a column of water beside the ship as a gun camera picture show, you know, you would think you would have felt a damn concussion from the round. Anybody that has ever been in combat or had anything of any magnitude explode next to them, you know there's a concussion that comes out from it, and it'll knock the devil out of you. Well, there was nothing like that happened. And some real bright people that have offered us some assistance and have been working on our court of inquiry site, they went to dissecting some of this stuff, and hey, this was a bunch of crap. Here of what they're reporting.
It shows those photos on your website.
Right.
Is that correct?
Beg your pardon?
It shows those two photos on your website.
Right. That is correct.
And I'm looking at them and I'm thinking,
well, I looked at the photographs and I didn't see it. You know, I couldn't figure it out. It puzzled me.
Yeah.
I had a bunch of photos that the attorney and I had worked back and forth over a year ago that dealt with the smoke and all of that, and some of the phony crap, and they said, well, the superstructure was clouded with smoke. Well, that's just so much BS. It was not. The smoke was trailing off behind the ship. Just as these pictures, you know, I looked at them, and I just couldn't figure what that was. Now, once this analysis was done, and I stopped and I looked at these photographs, I thought, I did not believe this. I thought, I can't believe these suckers are that stupid that they would use a docking photo of that ship and try and make it look like a gun camera photo.
Yeah, they're terrible. I mean, it's a terrible picture. I mean, it's just, you know, they doctored it up. I mean, it isn't
right.
Like a professional figured that out.
didn't do a very good job.
Well, they did a terrible job.
Well, it all goes back to the cover-up that started many years ago. It's still alive and well today. But I have to give the judge credit for one thing. He put a fire under Ward Boston, and Ward Boston has come out. He has given radio interviews. He's talked. You know, it rekindled a great deal of interest here, and all his efforts to put us to rest, all he did was he rejuvenated us, and we've gone forward. And there's something I'd like to get back to. I listened to him at, I've seen him two or three times, not in person, but on television. And I've listened to very closely to what the man said.
And you are referring to?
Judge A.J. Crystal.
Okay.
From Miami, Florida, the federal bankruptcy judge.
Right. Okay.
He admits to making 15 trips to Israel. I sit and thought about that. Can you imagine what it would cost to make that many trips over there? It would be quite expensive. He's done this over about a 10-year time frame, 11 years, something like that. I'm not sure how many years, but about a decade worth. All right. The Israeli military helped him. They flew him out to the area that we were in when we were attacked. But now he says, his words were, when he was asked once, how much were you paid to do this? He said, nobody even bought me so much as a soda pop. I think those were his words verbatim. I find that a little hard to believe. I sometimes wonder, why didn't he put this much effort into proving what was true? You know, he's been called an amateur historian.
Well, listen, Gary, before we run out of time, we're down to probably about the last 4 minutes.
Okay.
First of all, next Friday, we're going to have Ernie.
Right.
What we're going to do is we're going to work something out with him, and then the following Friday, I'd like to make arrangements to have Ennis on.
Right.
And speaking of Jim Ennis, there's quite a number of books and videos, and
right. The
History Channel has even done a story on you guys.
Right. The International History Channel is, however you get them, I don't know how to get them. They're fixing to run us here in early April, 14th or 15th of April, I should say, middle of April.
What is it going to be called?
Beg your pardon?
What will the program be called? The USS Liberty or?
Attack on the Liberty, something like that. I only saw this information today. It just came across on our web, the LVA Private Collect, where the crewmen only speak in exchange emails. But to get back, you asked about the books. There are a number of good books to go out and read. Jim Ennis, as I told him last night in a board phone call that the Liberty Veterans Association board had, Jim's not on the board, but, you know, I referred to him as the godfather of the Liberty Veterans Association. He wrote the book. Jim has done more interviews, talked to more people, knows more people than probably anybody else. His book is a must-read for anybody that wants to look at this. There are a couple of other books that I would suggest. One is by James Bamford, Body of Secrets. Mr. Bamford just came out with a new book. In fact, he graced us with his presence in Nebraska at our last little reunion. And there's about 90 or so pages in Body of Secrets by Bamford. And then probably one of the last books is Peter Hoonan and Operation Cyanide. Now, probably it's not. We're running out of time. And probably Ernie, I'll chat with him between now and when you talk to him. He can talk to you about cyanide.
Well, you're going to be back with
a little better job of that.
This doesn't end tonight.
Beg your pardon?
This will not end tonight. We're going to be doing this
again. And there is there's more than one video out there, but there's a video called Dead in the Water. If you don't have it, I'm going to send you one.
I do not have it.
It is a must see. And,
well, Gary, listen, that's our closure song. I want to thank you very much for being with us tonight. And we'll be talking some more. Have a terrific weekend. Well, thank you again.
Richard, it's been my pleasure. I appreciate the opportunity, and you made a friend for life out of me.
All right, Gary. Thank you again. God bless.
All right,
have
I'm going
weekend.
To bed, and I'll talk to you later.
Okay.
Good night.
This is Sergeant Richard Cabral signing off. Have a great weekend. Tour of duty. God bless. See you Monday.